The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
Welcome to episode 4 of the J&J podcast. We hope that you are enjoying listening to the story as much as we enjoy telling it. In this episode, you will finally figure out about this mysterious man that has constantly been mentioned, Myron Hunsberger. It's about time we address who he is and why he plays such a big role. Originally, when we read the case files, we were under the impression that Myron was just a side character and that he was just a friend of Jerry's. But after further diving into the case files, and after both interviews with Dan and Cheryl, who were Jerry's children, we realized that he might actually have a major connection to both cases.
Since we got the chance to talk to Jerry's son, Dan, we learned who he thinks is responsible and how he feels about this person and the situation.
He told me he got accused of it, went to trial over it. They came out here and searched the farm back then. But the person who did it is never really heard of, being Myron Hunsberger. And see, that's the thing, is nobody, like, through all these years and everything that just happened over here, not one mention of Myron's name. Like, no, Myron's not even a suspect. And that's the thing. Like, even on the news and all the exposure here, not once was anything ever said about Hunsberger.
Now that we have heard what Dan thinks, next let's hear what Myron had to say for himself.
My name is Lieutenant Spanward Mitchum. First name spelled S-P-A-N-D-W-A-R-D. Middle initial T. Last name spelled M-I-T-C-H-E-M. I am present here in South Bend Police Department, room 53, and also present here is Trooper Thomas Travis, that is T-R-A-V-I-S, of Michigan State Police. And Myron, what's your middle name?
L.
L. Hunsberger, spelled H-U-N-S-B-E-R-G-E-R. A male, white, 42 of age. What is your address?
50500 Gumwood Road, Granger, Indiana.
The time of the sworn statement starting is 10:30 a.m., April 8th, 1976.
At this point, I would like to interject that Myron Hunsberger in a conversation with Prosecutor Chap Liu at the time. This was yesterday?
Right.
That time, Mr. Chaplew.
Day before yesterday.
That was the day before yesterday. It was the day before yesterday. At that time, Mr. Chaplew gave Mr. Myron Hunsberger immunity for all offenses which were committed by him other than other capital offenses up until the day that he talked to him, which was...
The 6th.
Day before yesterday, it would have been April 6, 1976.
Tuesday, right?
Right.
That's correct, Mr. Hunsberger?
That's right. Right? That's right.
And in return for that immunity, you are to give true, truthful statements concerning the incident involving the disappearance of Janice Langs. Is that correct?
That's right.
Now again, Mr. Hunsberger, would you state your name and address?
Myron L. Hunsberger, 50500 Gumwood Road, Granger, Indiana.
Mr. Hunsberger, are you giving this statement of your own free will?
That's right.
Myron, why don't you just start right out from the first time you met Jerry, and in particular, concerning the incident involving the vehicle that we discussed, and also the disappearance of Janice Langs?
Start about the time.
Go into a little of the background about Jerry Libertowski, your association with him, and lead us up to the disappearance of Janice Langs.
For several years, Jerry Libertowski and I worked together as contractors.
Excuse me? Mr. Hunsberger, would you tell us approximately what time you started working with Jerry Libertowski?
18 to 20 years ago.
Okay. And during that time, have you remained close friends with him?
No. We have had business relationships on and off in this period of time.
Okay. Now continue with your statement, please.
Okay. Pertaining to the disappearance of Janice Langs, one morning in the fall, in November, I went to the office to go to work.
What year was that, Myron?
What year was that? Myron, 73, right?
What do you recall, Myron?
I think it was 1973.
Okay, thank you.
Continue, please.
We went to work that day, and that evening, as it got dark, Jerry Libertowski asked me if I would do him a favor, and I told him yes, I would. He said he had a friend that was behind on his car payments and needed to have the car put out of sight for a few weeks. I called my brother, Forrest Hunsberger.
Do you know his address?
Elwood, Indiana. And I asked him if he would put the car down there. He says, yes, I could. I drove the car down. When I got down there...
Stop there a minute, Myron. Let us back up a little bit. When did you first see the car?
All right, when I first seen the car, it was parked in the garage behind our office at 901 West Indiana Avenue.
What is the name of your office?
At that time.
A&B Builders and Supply Company.
Continue, please.
We opened the garage door, and there was a red Mercury Montego. He backed the car out of the garage. I drove it to Elwood.
Okay. Approximately what year was this car, to the best of your recollection?
1972. I drove the car to Elwood. When I get to Elwood, he told me that the car had to be put out of sight at this point.
Excuse me? Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Did Jerry Libertowski go to Elwood, Indiana with you also?
Yes, he followed me down in his truck.
Okay, go ahead.
When I get the car down there, he told my brother and I that it would have to be put out of sight.
Where was the car then?
Sitting in the front yard.
Whose front yard?
My brother's.
Okay.
Forrest's. He said the car had to be put out of sight, quote, because it was involved in a murder of a man, end quote. My brother and I about had a heart attack. We drove it over to another brother's home.
Who was that?
James Hunsberger.
Do you know his address?
It's Elwood.
Thank you.
He was on vacation in Colorado. My brother came home 2 or 3 days later. The car was parked in his barn. He took a torch and cut up the car.
Let's back up just a little bit.
Okay.
All right. Now, you left the car at James' residence. Is that correct?
Right.
All right. What was done with the car there at that time?
It was parked inside the barn.
All right. Was anything removed from the car?
No, not at this particular... Yes. Excuse me. Okay. At this particular time that we left the car there, Jerry pried the glove compartment open. To my recollection, there was nothing in it. He took the license plate off the back of the car, took a pair of tin snips, cut it up into several small pieces. Excuse me.
At this time, did you happen to observe the plate numbers on the car?
No.
Okay.
Don't even know what state the plates were issued from. At this time, I got into Jerry's truck. He was driving, and on the way back, he would throw the small pieces of license plate out along the highway.
Okay, going back just a little bit. Again, was any mention made by Jerry to your brother Forrest about the deposition of his car? What did he want done with the car?
He wanted the car dismantled.
Did he tell this to Forrest?
Yes.
And what did Forrest tell him?
Well, being as scared as I was, he says, quote, "All right, as soon as my brother gets back from Colorado, he's the one that's got the torches and we'll have him dismantle the automobile," end quote.
So then you left, correct?
Then we left.
And you drove back?
Headed back to South Bend.
All right, excuse me. You mentioned two brothers, Forrest.
Right.
And James.
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 Right.
Could you tell us, to the best of your knowledge, which brother actually cut the car up?
James.
Do you know that for a fact, Myron?
Yes.
How do you know that?
Because he told me so.
Do you know what he did with the car after it was cut up, the pieces up from the car?
Most of the pieces from the automobile were taken to the junkyard.
What junkyard?
That I don't know.
Yes. How about the motor of the car?
The motor of the automobile, the transmission he kept, and a few smaller items like...
Where did he keep it at then?
In his barn.
What is his address, if you know?
It's just in Elwood, Indiana. I don't know the address.
Do you know what street he lives on?
No.
Now, this is the home of...
James.
James Holmesberger?
Right, right.
Now, after you and Jerry Libertowski were on your way back to South Bend, was there any other conversation between you and he about the car being dismantled or the man that had mentioned previously as being killed?
No, that was the extent of the conversation. He wouldn't talk about it anymore, just about the fact that some guy, quote, messed over him and he killed him.
Did he mention who the guy was?
No.
Did he mention what happened?
No.
Did you later find out what happened?
Yes, approximately 1 year later, a newspaper article came out in the South Bend Tribune.
Would this be in 1974?
This would be in 1974.
Approximately what month would they be?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember what month the article came out.
Okay.
But in the article it said, Janice Langs, the owner of the 72 Red Mercury Montego, was missing, and at this time, Jerry and I was working together.
Hold it just a second now. When you read that article and you saw the name Janice Langs, did the name Janice Langs mean anything to you?
Yes, I knew her.
How did you know her?
Vaguely, through Jerry.
In what regard?
That he was living with, she was living with him.
Okay, so then you knew that there was some kind of romantic relationship between the two of them? Is that right?
Definitely.
All right. So then having that knowledge, and after reading that newspaper article, what did you do?
Automatically, I knew she was the one he killed instead of some man. The next day, we was working on Canterbury Street in South Bend for some people by the name of Nemeth, putting siding on a home. I confronted Jerry with the fact that, and Jerry told me, yes, I killed her. I asked him, Jerry, what did you do with her? He says, I buried her.
Did he mention where he had killed her at?
He didn't mention the fact where he killed her at. He told me, I asked him some of the details about it. He told me that he followed her for quite a while and that he went to her home.
Did he say why he was following her?
No.
To your knowledge, he had been living with her?
No, he did not tell me why he was following her.
Did you know, or had you found out, that she had broken off with him?
Yes, I knew she wasn't living there, so I took it for granted she wasn't. He had another girl living with him.
Okay.
That's when, as soon as she moved out, Janice Sanders moved in to live with him.
Let's go back to the following business now.
I was trying to figure out where I was at. All right, he told me he was following her. He told me that he went to her home, went through the garage, made some noises. She came out, and he hit her with a lug wrench.
Do you know where Janice Langs lived?
No.
Okay.
I had no idea.
Now, do you recall his exact words? Was it a wrench, a lug wrench? Do you recall the exact words?
If I'm not mistaken, he said a lug wrench.
Who are you referring to when you say her?
Janice Langs.
Did he mention her name to you?
Yes.
In this conversation?
Yes.
He referred to the woman that he had hit with this wrench as Janice Langs?
Yes.
What happened next? What did he tell you next?
He told me he went into the home. He took some of her clothes, took her car keys, put her in the trunk of his automobile, moved both automobiles, buried her, hid the red Montego in the garage behind our office.
All right. Why did he take her clothes?
To make it look like it was that she had ran away with the clothes, her automobile. It looked like she got aggravated and left the country.
Are you saying he took all of her clothes from her home?
Parts of them.
Parts of them?
Parts of them.
You mentioned another car, a second car. What other car were you referring to?
His 1967 Cadillac. Jerry Libertowski's 1967 Cadillac.
And the other car would be the 1972 Mercury?
Right.
Now, to dispose of the body, then you are telling us he told you he took the body and put Janice Lang's in one of the cars. Is that correct?
In Jerry's 1967 Cadillac.
Okay. Now, in an earlier conversation that I have had with you, Myron, you mentioned the attack in the garage. Could you go into greater detail as to what he told you concerning that attack?
Yes. He told me there was an extensive amount of blood that was on the garage floor and that he went back after everything was taken care of. He went back and took water and cleaned this blood up off the garage floor.
This would have been at Janice Lang's house?
At Janice Lang's home.
Home. Okay. Is there anything else that he mentioned about the incident in the garage?
No, not to my memory.
Now, going back to the body, could you go into detail if he told you and tell us if he told you, how did he dispose of the body?
The extent of our conversation was that he dug a hole and buried her deep.
Did he say where?
No.
How many conversations have you had with Jerry Libertowski concerning Janice Lang's?
We've had several over the last couple of years. Approximately, I would say 10 to 12.
All right. During those conversations, how many times did he mention or actually say to you that he had killed Janice Lang's?
Several times.
Can you pinpoint several?
8 to 10 of them.
The conversations generally then got around to the ultimate demise of Janice Lang's. Is that correct?
Right.
Did he make any mention to you as to why he went about this particular procedure and why he got the clothes and why he buried the girl and so forth?
To make it look like a disappearance, a runaway case.
Did he ever mention to you anything concerning the police investigation of Janice Lang's disappearance?
Yes, he did. He told me as long as there was no automobile, no body, there was no murder. Without an automobile and a body, there was no way he could ever be convicted of murder.
And yet he told you all of these facts.
Right.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Why do you think he told you those facts?
He told me these facts because he knew I couldn't say anything because I was involved in a disappearance of the automobile.
To your knowledge, did you ever tell anyone else about his killing Janice Lang's?
He made the statement to me several times that he had let several people know. For me to say exactly who they might be, I couldn't come right out and say for sure. I'm positive his ex-wife, Doris, he has told the reason.
Do you know Doris's name now?
Her last name? I can't think of it. I know it and I can't think of it. She married a guy and I know this guy too, and I can't think of his name. It is right on the tip of my tongue. I can't think of it. The reason he would tell her about the deal like this is to keep her scared, and she is very frightened of him.
Is that the woman that he has the child by?
Yes.
Do you recall when he told his ex-wife Doris? Dora, isn't it?
No, Doris.
Doris, about the incident?
I would say probably as soon as he told me, maybe even sooner.
Have you ever talked to Dora?
Doris?
Doris, about it.
Yes, I went and seen Doris one day because I was quite concerned, and she told me out of her own mouth that she knew for a fact that Jerry did exactly what I was questioned about at the Michigan State Police Post.
Are you referring to...
Janice Langs.
Janice Langs. Is that the extent of the conversation you had with Doris?
Yes.
To your knowledge, do you know where he buried Janice Langs?
No, I don't.
Do you know anyone who does?
No, I don't. Jerry made the statement to me that two can keep a secret as long as one is dead.
Going back to Doris, if I told you that her name was Doris Starr, would that help?
That was her maiden name. She's remarried now.
At the time you talked to Doris, do you recall what construction project you were working on at the time?
I don't remember what construction project we was working on at the time. In fact, Jerry wasn't working with me at the time. We had a little falling out and Jerry went his way and I went mine. I went to Doris's business, which is located on Western Avenue, some type of salvage business, molding, fixtures, things of that sort.
Do you know what 100 block this is located in? Is it in the city?
Yes, it's probably in the 3300 block. Let me ask you a question. What 100 block is Jack Frost located in?
I know exactly where it is.
Okay, it's about 3300, right?
They're out of business now, right?
Yes, I believe they are.
Midway something. There's a new place there now. I know where you are talking about. I had a case there once. I remember talking to the people.
I hate to take you back again, but Doris's married name now. Could it be Child Nest?
No.
S-H-I-L-D-N-E-S-T?
No.
It's not?
No.
Okay. You can't recall what it is, right?
I know it. Tucker. Doris Tucker. She's married. I don't remember her husband's first name. Her last name is Doris Tucker now at the present.
Thank you. Did Jerry Libertowski ever tell you that he killed anyone else?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Off the record. Go back on the record. Go ahead.
Now, in later conversations after the second girl, Janice Sanders, disappeared, did you meet with Jerry?
Yes. We hadn't worked together for approximately a year. I get a phone call one day, wasn't too good of friends at this time. I get a phone call saying, "Hi, buddy, I think this is the last opportunity I'll get to talk to you because the heat is on and I think I'm going to jail." And this was over the disappearance of Janice Sanders.
What were his words, to the best of your knowledge?
I met with Jerry later and the words that he told me, to the best of my knowledge, were that he had to, quote, do away with her because she was going to tell on him for the first girl, Janice Langs.
So what you're saying is...
And he had to work fast. He couldn't dispose of the automobile because he was afraid she was going to go to the police.
You're referring to the second girl?
To the second girl, Janice Sanders.
And you knew the second girl?
I knew the second girl very well.
So in conversation, in essence, what he told you was, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that he had killed the second girl, Janice Sanders, because she knew...
About the first murder.
That he had killed the first one.
Right, that's right.
Did he mention that he had told Janice Sanders about this Janice Langs case?
He never told me that he told her, but he told me that she knew and he was scared she was going to go tell the police.
He didn't mention how she knew, did he?
No, he didn't mention how she knew.
In your conversations then, after the Sanders girl disappeared, how many conversations have you had with him since the time that you knew the Sanders girl disappeared?
I've had several with him.
And at each time that you met with him, did the subject of the two girls come up?
Several times.
And in reference to what? What are his statements that you can best recall?
His statements, regardless of who was around, he would lead you to believe, let you know that he did it. His statements were like, "There's no way I can be convicted. Without a body, there's no murder."
Let's see if we can pin down a time. The last time you saw Jerry, that he had mentioned his girls and the fact that he killed them, the last time that you met with Jerry, that he mentioned these girls?
Approximately, exactly, April the 5th, 1976, in Albert's Bar.
Where is Albert's Bar located?
South Bend, Indiana, on Lincoln Way.
Do you know the street name? Could it be on the corner of Scott and Lincoln Way?
Right.
To the best of your recollection, can you reiterate the conversation that you had with him concerning these girls?
The same as we always had. He did it.
To the best of your recollection, what were his statements?
Do you want to know how?
What did he say?
What did he say, and what was the conversation that you had with him, to the best of your recollection?
He told me that he had killed her.
Who are you referring to when you say her?
Janice Sanders.
In our prior conversations, there was a conversation concerning Jean Higby.
All right.
Now, for the record.
I've got you.
For the record, tell me who Jean Higby is and what his relationship is with you.
Jean Higby is an ex-worker of Jerry's and mine. And after Jerry and I parted company, Jean continued to work with me. And after Jerry and I parted company, Jean continued to work for me with his brother Alvin. Jean Higby wouldn't work with his brother anymore, so he went out on his own, still working for me. Jean Higby did not do a good job of work. He didn't do a good job of work, so I let him go. Jean Higby stole tools, materials, etc. from myself. Jean Higby tried to draw Indiana unemployment, which a subcontractor can't draw.
When did he do this, Myron?
In the first of this year, the first of 1976. He also tried to draw it in the state of Michigan.
Did you subsequently get a telephone call from Jean Higby?
Yes, I got a telephone call from Jean Higby at 2:30 one morning stating the fact if I didn't come up with $1,600, he was going to go to the Michigan State Police and tell them about the disappearance of both girls, which I had told him parts of this beforehand, parts that I know are true.
Let me back up. What you're saying is that in prior conversations with Jean Higby, you had mentioned the death of the two girls, Janice Langs and Janice Sanders.
Right.
Did you make reference in your conversation with Jean Higby to the effect that Jerry Libertowski had killed these two girls?
Yes.
Then Jean Higby had, in essence, some information?
Right.
That he could go to the police with?
Right, right.
Okay. Now, getting back to the conversation that you had on the 5th of April, 1976, with Jerry Libertowski at Albert's, did you mention the conversation that you had with Jean Higby over the telephone?
Yes, I did.
And what did you say to him?
I told him that Jean was going to go to the police. Jerry told him, let him go. They have no evidence. I could not be convicted.
Did he go into further detail?
I don't remember.
Pardon?
I don't remember.
Did he say anything to you at that time? The conversation that I'm talking about that occurred on the 5th, and that was the last conversation that you had with him concerning the girls, did he make mention of the bodies?
He told me that they would never find them, that he buries his bodies deep.
Did he ever mention how he buried them? If he dug a hole with a bulldozer or what?
He never mentioned it.
To your knowledge, strike that. In your own mind, Myron, do you have an idea where either one of these girls may be buried?
Yes, I think on his father's property.
All right. In a previous conversation with you, you mentioned a conversation you had with Jerry Libertowski shortly after the time that his father's farm was searched by the state police in Michigan.
He told me that he was standing up by the house and he could see the dogs, the troopers, the helicopters, the men searching the farm. And after they went by a particular big tree, he knew they wouldn't find anything, that they'd went too far.
And what do you think he meant by that, Myron?
I would say that she's buried by the side of the tree.
Do you know which girl he was referring to?
I would think Janice Sanders, because the other one was two and a half years prior, and that there wouldn't be no evidence of a grave.
Do you recall what tree he was talking about?
No.
Off the record?
Let's recap and condense here.
Okay, let's get a little bit more about this tree.
Okay.
Going back to the tree, he said that when they went by a big tree, he knew that they weren't going to find anything.
Because they went too far.
Did he describe this tree to you in any detail?
No.
Just said it was a big tree.
Just a big tree.
Okay, off the record? Back on the record, going back to Janice Sanders, did Jerry Libertowski mention to you what he did with her car?
Yes, he said that he had to work fast on the second one. He didn't have time to plan it like the first one. so we put it right underneath the Michigan State Police's nose, the Holiday Inn across the street from the State Police Post.
He left the car at the Holiday Inn?
Right.
Across the street from the Michigan State Police Post?
Right.
Did he mention anything else about a car or what he might have done with her body?
No.
In a previous conversation, as I recall, you mentioned something that Jerry had said to you during one of the conversations about in practicing walking.
Jerry told me several times that he could go as far as Niles and walk all the way home to get himself in shape because there was no way he could hitchhike, take a cab or a bus because they could go back and establish that he was transported from there to there.
Did he say why he would practice walking to keep himself in shape?
So he could leave his truck and automobile at home so the neighbors would know that he didn't leave.
Didn't leave his house?
That they would assume the fact that he was still in his home.
Okay. Now, in a previous, at a previous conversation you mentioned, the name Jerry Libertowski, could you describe Jerry to us what he looks like?
Probably 6'1", 210, blonde hair, peak nose, Polack.
Is he white then?
Yes.
Okay, do you recall his address here in South Bend, where he lived?
1018 East Johnson Street, South Bend.
To the best of your knowledge, does he live by himself or does someone live there with him now?
As of this time right now?
Right.
He lives by himself that I know of.
In our previous conversation, you mentioned the fact that Jerry had a 1966...
67 Cadillac.
67 Cadillac. What color was the black Cadillac?
Gray bottom, black vinyl top.
Do you know if he still has that Cadillac?
No, he doesn't.
Do you know who he sold it to?
No, I don't.
Or do you know when he got rid of it?
No, I don't. We wasn't working together for a period of a year or so.
He would have had to have gotten rid of this car after November of 1974. That is when the Langs girls disappeared, right?
I believe so.
Okay, let's continue along the same lines considering this particular automobile that Jerry owned. Something was in something was done with the truck. In a previous conversation, you mentioned that he said that he did something with the trunk of that car. Do you remember what that was?
Yes, he told me that he transported her in the trunk of his 1967 Cadillac.
By her? Whom are you referring to by her?
Janice Langs.
Okay, thank you.
Janice Langs.
To the best of your recollection, then, and I want to clarify this for the record, approximately the year and month that this happened.
November 1973.
Okay, all right. Now, in that private conversation with you, you had told me that he had made certain statements to you concerning what he did with the trunk of that car after he disposed of the body.
He told me that the back of the car was covered with blood after he disposed of the body, buried the body, and took it to a car wash and hose it out real well so there wouldn't be any evidence in it.
Did he mention which car wash he took it to?
No.
Can you recall any other statements concerning the killing of Janice Langs that we haven't covered in the statement?
No.
Okay. Then to sort of recap, then, the conversations that you have had with Jerry Libertowski since November of 1973, to your knowledge, he killed Janice Langs, he disposed of the automobile, and you helped him with the disposal of that car. Is that correct?
Right.
He also described to you the method that he used to get rid of the stains in the car.
Right.
The taking of the clothing from Janice Lang's house.
Which he had burnt.
Which brings me to another question. What did you say he just...
Which he had burnt the clothes.
Did he say where he burned the clothes?
No.
Which brings me to another question. In a prior conversation with you, you mentioned that Jerry told you something about jewelry.
Oh, he told me in one of the conversations that he did take all the jewelry off of her, the watch, the rings, shoes, to make sure there was no metal on the body so that she couldn't be detected with a metal detector.
Okay. Did he make the statement in reference to both girls or just one girl?
I would say both girls because he made this particular statement. It was after the second girl disappeared also.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer.
Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Is there anything further you wish to add to the statement?
I can't remember anything else.
All the statements that you have made here today are the truth, to the best of your knowledge.
Every statement I made today is the truth to my knowledge, and exactly the way he told them to me.
Now, Mr. Hunsberger, would you be willing to testify in a court of law as to what you just told us?
Yes.
Is there any part of this statement or statements that you have made that you would like to change now?
No.
I have nothing further.
Was there any mention of money between either of these girls?
No.
How about a check?
No.
Mr. Hunsberger, is there anything else you wish to say at this time?
No, I don't remember anything else at the present time.
Mr. Hunsberger, we would like to have you sign the statement.
All right.
When it is typed up.
All right, fine.
Okay, the statement is ended. Say 11:30 a.m. on April 8th, 1976. Thank you.
Now that we've heard what Myron had to say, let's learn how he interacted with people and especially how he acted. One thing that caught my attention when learning about Myron's different interactions with people is how he treated Jerry's girlfriend, Beth Ann Donovan. Beth stated that Myron would frequently ask her if she was scared of Jerry, but there was never any follow-up as to why she needed to be scared. Also, on a different occasion, Myron turned to Beth and said, "Don't worry, that Pollock didn't do anything," referring to Jerry. In my opinion, I think it's odd how he wants to make it known that Jerry didn't do anything. It's almost like he wanted to get caught. Beth did state that when they were out one night, Jerry and Myron went to the bathroom together for a good period of time, 5 to 10 minutes. She also said that Myron did a lot of talking when she would go out with Jerry and Myron. This might just be a biased opinion, but when Beth was being questioned, she said he was, quote, "very belligerent and nasty, just nasty. I don't really care for him, so," end quote. Another thing that I noticed throughout my research is how Myron acted when Jerry had all the spotlight on him when people started pointing fingers as to who killed Janice. When Jerry had all the spotlight on him, Myron had said, quote, "it was good that the police suspected Jerry Libertowski because then I wouldn't have anything to worry about," end quote. This was stated to Dave Pietrzak, the bartender working that night, but also Myron's friend, which to me must mean that Myron was somewhat comfortable enough to say unhinged things like the things he would say, especially when he told Dave that he had gotten rid of the two girls and buried them on his farm.
Since we are on the topic of Myron's behaviors and things he has said and done, I think it is important we hear from Dan things he's heard from his dad and grandpa about the stuff Myron said and did.
I remember something along the line of, like, my dad was there and the gun, you know, and threatening, "if you ever say something, you know, I'll kill you too." And then, I mean, that's why my dad taught me, keep your friends close, your enemies closer, and keep your circle very small. Just because they were best friends and he turned on them, you know. And then, like, my grandpa was out there at Huntsburger's farm and he told my grandpa, "oh, don't step there, you step on that dead
So, backtracking just a little bit, when you heard Myron's statement, your opinion may have been swayed. You know, maybe you're thinking that he's innocent and there's no way he's guilty, or whatever. But last fall, Elena and Avery had a call with Cheryl, Jerry's daughter, and she gave us some firsthand information. Specifically, how Myron acted towards her and her family.
I knew Myron Huntsberger a lot, hell of a lot longer than Dan ever did, because Huntsberger was in my life from the time I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that man was scary. I was always scared of that man. Always. And in my mind, I always thought that he was 100% the guy that did it, just because he was an evil, scary person. And if I could just expand on that just a little bit, I had written down some of my answers and some of my notes, some of the key points I wanted to make in this conversation. I fled the state of Indiana because of Huntsberger. I didn't tell anyone where I was going, and I moved to Georgia because it was sometime between 2002 and 2004. I was standing at a counter of an auto parts store with my kids, and another former way back family friend of my dad and mom's walked into the store and said, "This is the girl." And there stands Huntsberger. And he was like, "Do you remember?" And he's like, "No, but I'll remember her face now." And he proceeded to, after that occasion, follow and stalk me and my kids. He would follow me to my son's gymnastics. He would be in an empty grocery cart next to me, following me in Walmart. He was stalking me. And we basically feared for our life. And she's the reason I left the North and moved.
She also told us what her dad was like growing up, which is good because it's good to have an account of what he was like, because none of us knew him and we don't know what he was really like. However, I would like to say that Cheryl was pretty young. I mean, around 10 years old. You know, remember when you were back, when you were 10 years old? I mean, I remember some key points from that year, but I don't remember everything. And she's probably the same. So, and she did say that she didn't see him very often because her mom and her dad were not married, and so she wasn't with him all the time. So the person that Cheryl knows as her dad may be a different Jerry than the one that other people know.
My mom and dad separated when I was 7. So I didn't see him all the time. I just basically had the standard visitation, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot of things I still learned from him. Like things like treat others like you would like to be treated, respect your elders, taught me about farming because we, you know, had the farm and everything when I was growing up. But one thing he always did promote was working hard but also having fun. So basically it was, you know, a lot of good life lessons and, you know, basically those were my takeaways from my childhood, from my limited exposure of, you know, not seeing him all the time every day.
I would also like to point out that, and, you know, this is something that I didn't think about before listening to this recording of the call with Cheryl, that of course, the victim and their family experience extreme trauma. But what I didn't realize is that the family of the accused also experiences trauma, whether they have to deal with and process that. You know, maybe my family member did do this. Maybe they're not the person that I've known for so long and loved. Or even as Cheryl talks about, Jerry's family is connected to the case, and people associate them with the bad and murder, even though they're not the ones that committed the crime. And they are on the side of the accused, but that isn't because they think the crime was okay or they don't have compassion for the victim and their family. In my opinion, I think they side with the accused, which is their family member, because they want to believe in their innocence, not, you know, just blowing off the crime like it was, you know, like that's an okay thing to do. They're not doing that. They don't want their family member to be a murderer, a convicted murderer. So let's listen.
It basically traumatized my life to the point of I still experience that trauma. I was lucky to have friends at school who believed he was innocent and were still able to hang out with me. But then there were also parents who wouldn't let their kids associate with me. That was pretty traumatic.
Yeah.
You know, just not knowing any of the details of it was, you know, it's always been one of those things that it's like, I was so right in the middle of it, and my dad was in jail. I was hearing about it on the radio. It was, you know, everybody knew about it. Everybody was pointing fingers at me. Oh, that's his kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was really just, it was a lot of trauma. I mean, I understand that those, her kids went through a lot of trauma too. And I worried about her kids on a regular basis because they ended up having to go live with their dad. And that's a whole nother topic. But yeah, I mean, it just, if I had to sum it all up, I would just say trauma.
And then just a few years ago, actually, the case was brought back up. I don't think it ever officially closed, did it? It was just kind of was...
Yeah,
I was just kind of not doing anything with it. But a few years ago, it was brought back up and they searched the Libertowski farm. And during this time, Cheryl had found some new information.
Okay. So when I was, when they started searching the farm and came flow over with the infrared and all that kind of stuff at my brother's farm in Michigan, I happened to be there. Staying on an extended stay because my son lives up there and he's been ill. So I had lunch with a few different friends and people. And one of those people was one of my dad's ex-girlfriends who still stayed very close with the family. And okay. I had lunch with her and I was asking her some questions. It's like, you know, what did he ever tell you and what, you know, what, who have you talked to and what have you known? And so I learned some new information. Karen told me some new information. I learned from her that he had told her that there was a hit out on Janice, that someone had paid Myron to kidnap her and do whatever he was to do beyond that. Basically, take her out of existence is what I understood her explanation to me that my dad had told her. Okay. So this is the new information that I was trying to give Sergeant Moore that he didn't want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But what that did is it sparked a memory in me because Janice and her kids lived at my dad's house. And when I came for visitation on the weekends, those kids were the kids I played with. Okay. But there were a few occasions when it was their dad's weekend to have them for visitation. And on one occasion, well, actually a couple occasions, Mr. Sanders Sr., Jim Sanders Sr.,
mm-hmm.
had come to drop off the kids and was screaming and yelling and having an argument with Janice, physically pushing her. And I was told, get Dina, which is her daughter, who was just a little bit younger than me, get Dina and take her upstairs because Dina was crying uncontrollably, clinging to her dad's, or to her mom's leg. And I had to grab the baby and the older child and take them upstairs because Jim was very violent with Janice. And I heard him on more than one occasion tell her, I'm going to get those kids one way or another.
One thing I would love to talk about and mention is the fact that before speaking to Dan, we all mostly thought that Jerry did it without a doubt.
Are our views shifting? Do we think Byron's the one who did
it? Yeah.
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 Especially after reading those
something,
statements.
Some little, like,
I think Gerald was involved to an extent, but I think...
Some little thing inside of me is still kind of telling me it's Gerald, but I don't know. It's because that's the first view we originally...
What if they made
first
us all...
View. No, I think it's more than that.
First perspective we gained. But what if they made us all the signs point to Jerry, and then we think it's Myron, and then we think it's Jerry?
Debrief time. No, I don't know if this is something, and I kind of already said it. I think I said something similar in another episode. But like nobody was, it's not like people were expecting Janice or Janice to go missing. And so there's stuff like things that may have been out of the ordinary that people like didn't take note of because mm-hmm. they weren't expecting anything to go wrong. Like we can easily look back and say, you should have noticed this. You should have been paying more attention. But like in everyday life, day by day, are you really going to notice like everything that's out of place?
Especially like, I even said this, I was very, I criticized the people that she worked with being like, you know, they should have paid more attention. But I guess if it was busy and you're going around and you're trying to serve people and do everything, you might not notice it.
And right. then like, also the thing was she was only there for 2 weeks.
Mm.
Yeah.
So like, they don't know, like they probably weren't aware of her behavior when she was stressed. Right. Like they probably don't know the emotions that she would go through. Like if she was happy, like you don't know what kind of facial expressions
like stuff
she has.
That, like only close friends could tell right. about you.
Right. To be fair, half the time at my work, I don't even know where all the workers are. Like I don't know where my coworkers are.
Right.
Because we're all trying to do our tasks and do our job.
Right. Exactly. And that's like the thing is that like they don't know, like stressed out.
Yeah,
they don't
like
know.
If she's trying to hide it, like
right. They don't. Yeah. Because it was 2 weeks. I mean, you could obviously pick up on it, but it usually takes longer than 2 weeks.
And I think they're noticing it more after the fact because they're being forced to recognize, oh, okay, so she was scared at this time. She was, and Jerry was acting this way and that way. And so.
Yeah. And so Janice had been working at Avco Finance, which is her last place of work, but she was there for a couple weeks. And Janice was only at Pete's Patio for like, less than 5 days, maybe. I think like she was.
Oh yeah,
she
yeah.
was not there for very long.
Yeah, 5 days. Yeah, it was like 5 days. Like
they were both not at their jobs for long.
We just print like a Facebook thing, and it's like on our bulletin board. But it was like the day that she had started her job. I just don't remember what day it was. I think it was like the
it's like 15th.
Yeah, it was like the 15th to the 17th. One of the two. That concludes our debrief. We hope that you enjoyed learning about who Myron was and our discoveries about him. See you next time where we will talk more about Jerry Libertowski and the facts about what happened. Bye! Underestimated. J&J was researched, written, and produced by Avery, Elena, Miriam, Simone, Monte, and Lexi. Intro music by Haley, all other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Lexi. The Underestimated podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community Schools Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.